Diana Dawes in Cause Célèbre, a play written for radio by Terence Rattigan and produced by Norman Wright, with Gwen Watford, Carlton Hobbs, Robert Harris, Noel Johnson and Robin Brown. Cause Célèbre.
Daily willing lad, 14 to 18, for housework. Scout train preferred.
What's that in?
Bournemouth Daily Echo. I was thinking of our George.
I know you were. No go, though, is it?
Why not?
Not scout train.
He could always say he was. Young Freddie up the road could teach him the oath and the salute and maybe a couple of knots.
My George doesn't lie.
Oh, but it'd be a white one.
Anyway, he's over the age.
No, he's not. 14 to 18. 17's just right.
Some little nipper they want. Page boy or something. Anyway, the money'd be terrible.
Any money's worth it these days. You don't want him to go on the dole, do you, with the other 2 million?
2 million is an exaggeration. Mr. Ramsay MacDonald said so the other day.
I wish Mr. Ramsay MacDonald would go on the dole.
No need for that. We all know you'd have liked to have seen Red Revolution 4 years ago.
No.
Instead of which, we had a patriotic gentleman in Downing Street who put country before party.
And a fat lot he's done for the country, hasn't he?
I'd like to know where we'd all be now without him, that's all. National bankruptcy. That's what we'd have faced, instead of which we got
2 million unemployed.
Unemployable, half of them.
You can say things like that. You're in work. Building trade's doing all right now. Just wait till 1936, my boy.
Building trade will always be all right. What with slum clearance and all that?
Just wait till next year, that's all. Well, what do I do about this? Or do you want our George to go on doing odd jobs for you, unpaid, all his life?
Where does it say to apply?
The Villa Madeira, Manor Road, Bournemouth.
You put in the Bournemouth Daily Echo.
Send him away. They seem to be answering by the hundred, Irene. Tell him the post's already filled.
It isn't.
Don't be silly. I chose that little fair-haired one yesterday.
And I meant to tell you, his scoutmaster called when you were out and...
Well,
he said he was sorry, but didn't sound a suitable place.
I must have made a bad impression. What did I do, I wonder? Use a naughty word or something?
You must have told him you'd been divorced. The scoutmaster mentioned that.
I talk too much. That's my trouble. Still, it was 8 years ago, and in Canada. It doesn't seem any harm.
And you filled him up with gin?
That little boy? I couldn't have.
Well, the scoutmaster says you did.
Oh, yes, I remember. He'd walked all the way from Boscombe and was thirsty, poor little chap. I gave him a lemonade and he said it had lost its fizz, so I put a thimbleful of gin just to liven it up. He liked it so much he asked for another.
And you gave it him?
Only a finger, Irene. He'd got that long walk back, remember? Poor little mutt.
He's 15 and it's against the law.
Silly law. When I was his age, I was drinking men of 30 and 40 under the table.
Yeah, well, you'd join them later, no doubt.
Well, that would depend, wouldn't it? They didn't all look like Ronald Coleman. None of them did, come to think of it. So, the scoutmaster thought his little Timmy was going to work in a maison. I hope little Timmy didn't think I was the madam, though. I haven't reached that age yet. Well, let's see this one, then.
All right, I'll send him in. The mistress will see you now.
Thank you.
Oh, hello.
Good afternoon.
Goodness, you're very big for a Boy Scout.
I'm not a Boy Scout.
Oh, of course, the advert says Scout Train, doesn't it?
Yes. But I'm not even that.
Well, that's honest. I must say I like you for that. I always say there's nothing like honesty in this life.
Yes. Well, I could have lied, of course. My grandma wanted me to lie, but I thought you'd find me out if I did.
Oh, I'd never have found you out. I'm far too trusting. That's my nature, really. Trusting.
Yes.
However did you think I could find you out?
Oh, knots, perhaps?
Knots? Me? I don't know a granny from a noose, and that's a fact. How old are you?
17.
You don't look 17.
18 in November.
I didn't mislead you just now, did I, when I said I was too trusting? You're really telling me the truth?
I always tell the truth.
Yes, I can see you do. Nice, open face. You can always tell liars just by looking at them. You're quite fully grown, are you?
Yes, in all respects.
You see, I was really looking more for a real boy. You know, 15, 16, something like that.
Yes, I see. Well, I thought I might be too old for you. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I didn't say you were too old. I mean, 17's all right.
You mean I'll do?
Well, hadn't I better tell you what your duties will be?
Oh, it says housework.
Yes. Helping out Irene Riggs. That was Irene who let you in. You'd be under her, you see.
Oh.
Well, you mustn't mind that. Irene isn't just a maid. She's more like a companion, really.
Yes.
So you'd be more like a companion to a companion, if you see what I mean. We don't stand for social distinctions in this house, or ceremony either. All friends together, I always say.
Yes. Would I be living in?
I'm afraid not. Irene does, of course, but we've only one other spare room, and that's upstairs right next to Irene's and mine. And I've a little boy of 6 who sleeps up there too. Also my elder son, Christopher, when he's at home.
Elder? Not by much, I wouldn't think.
Well, he's 13. By my second husband. Mr. Rattenbury's my third, believe it or not.
I'll believe. But only because you say it.
Well, thank you. Mind you, I did start young. Mr. Rattenbury, of course, is rather old, and he sleeps down here. In there. The stairs being too much for him.
I see.
Of course, if you'd been a little boy, like I meant in the advert, you could have slept up in a spare. If you'd been a really little boy. But being as you are, me and Irene slipping about upstairs with next to nothing on, well, would be kind of awkward, wouldn't it? And with an invalid husband and all.
Yes.
Do you live near?
Half hour's walk.
Of course I'd make allowance for that with your hours.
Can I ask how much?
£1 a week. I'm sorry, but I can't afford more, what with the slump and times being so bad. That's why I put boy, you see.
Yes. £1's all right.
Oh, good. So that's settled, then. Do you want to see the rest of the house?
Not much point, is there, as I won't be living in it.
No. Perhaps you'd like to have a talk to Irene.
Not unless you want me to.
She doesn't do the choosing. I do that. And you suit me fine.
When shall I start, then?
Tomorrow.
Okay.
Good. Well, we'll have a little drinky on that, shall we?
Afraid I don't drink.
Ah, that's just what you tell your prospective employers. I'm thinking of that half an hour's walk. Do you like gin in it?
I can't rightly say, miss. Sorry, it's Mrs., isn't it?
Yes, Mrs. Rattenbury. First name, Alma. And what's your name?
Wood.
First name?
George. George Alfred. I don't know why, but I'm usually called Alfred.
Well, just to be different, I'll call you George. I like to be different, you see. I mean, where's the fun in being like everyone else? This is a lovely world, I always say, and we're put into it to enjoy it. Don't you agree?
I might. I don't think my dad and gran would. They're religious.
Well, our dear Lord didn't say we mustn't have fun, did he? He turned water into wine, not wine into water. And he said, love each other, and I think we should. Well, here's health and a very happy association, I'm sure. Too strong for you. It's only half and half. Some people make it 5 parts gin to 1 part of Italian. Here, George, Come here. Over to the piano. Recognize this lady?
What? It's you.
That's right.
Night Brings Me You by Lausanne.
That's right.
But you said you're Alma. Alma Rattenbury.
Oh, Lausanne is just my pen name.
So you wrote a song?
Yes, and plenty of others too.
You're a songwriter?
Yes.
Like George Gershwin?
Well, sort of the same style. I only wish I sold as well.
But you've been published anyway, and with your photograph too.
Yes, I'm afraid it's rather an old photograph.
Yes, I can see that. But of course anyone could still tell it was you.
Thank you. It's 12 years old. And I was 26 when it was taken. Oh dear, what have I said? Now you can work out my real age.
48. Oh, sorry. 38. I never was any good at arithmetic.
You want to hear the song?
Oh, yes, please.
Night brings me stars above this bright world softly beaming. Night brings the moon across the blue hills brightly gleaming. Night brings me you, and then all my heart is dreaming, dreaming of love, a love that is mine alone. Oh, hello, dear. Enjoy your walkie.
No. It came on to rain, and the evening paper says shares have gone to hell again. Bring the whiskey over, will you?
Isn't it a bit early for you?
No, not tonight.
You're probably wondering who this is.
No, I wasn't. But who is he?
His name is Wood, and he's the new help.
Oh. Is that a boy?
Well, he is. He's only 17.
That doesn't look it.
I know. Quite the man, isn't he?
Quite the man. What work have you done before?
Nothing regular, sir. Just odd jobs for my dad.
What's his line?
Building.
Oh, that's how you got so muscular.
You got any references?
What are they?
Is there anyone who'll vouch for you?
Oh, well, just my dad and grandma.
I'll vouch for him.
Do you know him?
No, but I'll vouch for him. Instinct, that's all. I've got an instinct about him, and you know about my instincts.
Oh, yes, I know about it. Like when you told me to buy those rubber shares, they've gone to nothing.
They'll be all right, you see. Everything always turns out good when my instinct comes into it. That one went down pretty fast.
All right, sure it did. It's my whiskey.
No one's disputing that, dear.
I noticed you two are at the gin already.
Well, it seemed only hospitable with a new guest.
Guest? He's here to work, Alma. Not to sozzle my alcohol. Do you know what a bottle of gin costs these days? 12 and 6.
I don't drink, Mr. Rattenbury. Really, I don't. I was telling Mrs. Rattenbury.
Never mind him. He's just in one of his moods, that's all. It's all right, he can't hear. He's as deaf as a post. But you'd better go. George is going, dear.
George? Who's George?
George Wood.
Oh, him. Yeah. Well, does he drive a car?
I've got a license.
Well, isn't that marvellous? Isn't that marvellous, darling? We've got ourselves a chauffeur.
No uniform?
No, of course not. Well, perhaps just a cap and a Macintosh. You'd look nice in a cap.
What are you saying?
I was saying, no uniform, dear. You better finish that and go.
Oh.
You'll get used to it.
No, never. Not to drink. I disapprove of drink.
I'm off then, dear.
And what else do you disapprove of?
Well, that'd be asking, wouldn't it?
A white cap, I think, with a blue badge.
What time does he want his supper?
You better make it a bit earlier. He's on his second already. Oh, Irene, this is the new help. He's coming tomorrow.
Is he?
Well, good night, Mrs. Rattenbury. I'll be seeing you.
Nice young chap. Ever so well spoken and quite educated. He appreciates music, too.
Does he?
It'll be nice to have a man about the house, won't it?
Provided he is about the house, not in it.
Really, Irene, what do you take me for?
Well, sometimes I don't know, and that's a fact. Supper early, then.
Supper early?
Now, dear, let's try and cheer you up. How about a nice game of cards?
Bournemouth, horrible
murder, latest. Thank you, Cub.
Rattenbury and Wood, latest.
Thank you, Mrs. Have a nice read. Good, juicy murder, I can tell you.
Bournemouth murder, latest.
Oh, Mrs. Davenport, I've got your morning post. I'm sorry it's late for your breakfast, but it seems there's been quite a rush on them this morning.
That dreadful case, I suppose.
Yes. You know, some of the guests wouldn't wait, but went out to buy them from Gloucester Road Tube Station.
Oh, dear, how could they? I don't want to read about it at all. And unlike some of them, I really mean it. But it surely won't be in the Morning Post.
Oh, yes, it is. Front page and all. Look.
Oh, dear. You know, I really don't want it this morning. Would you like to keep it?
Thank you, Mrs. Davenport. The wife will like it. We only get the mirror. Cool, you should have seen the mirror this morning. 6 pages of photographs.
I'm glad I didn't.
Yes, nice-looking lad he is. Pity. Only 17 when he met her. Now he's over 18, of course. Hanging age, I'm afraid. My view is they ought to hang her. Give him a good birching and let him go. Cool, what a woman.
Thank you, Barker.
Good morning, Mrs. Davenport.
Good morning, General.
Nice day, isn't it? Perhaps spring is on the way at last.
If only it weren't for this frightful murder case.
Mrs. Davenport, perhaps you can settle a point between Miss Wattle and I.
Me?
Me? Oh, General, you're so pedantic.
Yes, I am, Mrs. Radley, I am. Can't help it. What are the failings of age?
What is the point, Mrs. Radley?
Your father was a judge, wasn't he?
Yes, in Simla.
Well, you must know the law better than we do. I mean, if 2 people confess to the same crime...
I'm sorry,
which they patently couldn't have committed together.
But as the woman was blind, drunk, apparently, and doped as well, and the boy admits to having taken 2 whole egg cupfuls of cocaine, they probably did do it together. And we'll both swing together and swear by the best of schools. Anything wrong, Mrs. Davenport?
I'm sorry. I must go to my room.
Bit squeamish, are we?
After all, dear, it's all over your Morning Post.
Which is why I haven't read my Morning Post. The New York Times, a newspaper of which you've probably neither of you ever heard, has a motto, all the news that's fit to print.
How do you come to read that?
I was in America for quite some time. My husband has business interests there.
Oh, had he?
I said has.
But I didn't know your husband was still alive.
I'm surprised, Miss Wattle. There's very little you seem not to know about your fellow guests at the Cornwall Gardens Hotel. Oh. I'm sorry, Mrs. Radley. What was the question of law you wanted to know?
Oh, my dear, if it disturbs you so much...
The law doesn't disturb me. The cases that it sometimes has to try can do. What is your question?
I've asked it, really. It was the others who made a joke of it. If 2 people confess to the same crime that only one could have committed, can they both be found guilty?
The law is perfectly clear on that. If 2 people plot a murder together but only one commits it, they are both equally guilty of murder.
Equally? But wouldn't you say that in this case the woman is far more guilty than the boy?
Not before the law, Miss Johnson, which knows no qualification of guilt.
Oh.
But if you ask me that question as one human being to another, I would agree with you utterly. Utterly, utterly. Forgive me. I'll see you at lunch.
I'll come with you.
Wowie! The Cornwall Gardens Hotel has a glamorous divorcee.
Hardly glamorous, dear.
And hardly the guilty party, I would think.
Oh, dear. Imagine the gossip in the lounge now about me.
Are you divorced?
Not yet. Separated. But going to be divorced now we've agreed about our boy.
Only child.
I've demanded and I've got full legal custody.
Oh, I'm glad.
I'll let him see his father, of course, but not with that woman. I'm sorry, General, to be embarrassing. Oh. I'm speaking freely because, of course, now I'll have to leave this hotel.
Hmm?
I don't know what possessed me to blurt it out just now. I've done it before, too, which is why I'm always changing hotels.
Oh, my dear Mrs. Davenport, we're not living under Queen Victoria. This is 1935. Divorce doesn't mean anything these days.
It means everything in places like this.
And why do you live in places like this?
When you're alone. Quite alone. You haven't much choice.
Well, at least now you'll have your son.
At holidays. He's still at school, you see.
Oh, where?
Near Bournemouth.
And how old is he?
17.
I see. Yes, yes, I understand now. No wonder the old girl's upset you.
I do love him very much, you see. After all, he's really all I have left. Thank you, General, for being so very kind.
A pleasure.
Which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive them which trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, for ever and ever. Amen. The peace of God, which passeth all understanding, be with you and remain with you always. Amen. I have a brief announcement. By order of the headmaster, I have had certain excisions made in today's national newspapers in the house library. While the Bournemouth Echo and the other local papers have been excluded altogether. I would advise you all against undue curiosity, which, as we all know, killed the cat. And will, I regret, if carried to excess, lead certain boys to the headmaster's study. That is all. Thank you.
Hey, Davenport. You're for the headmaster's study, aren't you?
On my way there to confess my grievous sin.
Don't wave it around like the Union Jack, Langdon. A bloody prefect might see it. Go over into that corner. It's yours if you're caught.
All right. Where'd you get it?
Matron, of course, from whom I get everything.
Not everything, I trust.
What I always say about you, Brown, is that your mind is as filthy as your fingernails.
After you with that rag, Langdon. All right. It's smashing stuff. You'll love it.
Will I? No. A chauffeur of 18 goes to bed with his employer's wife, aged 38. Mm. We've got far fruitier scandals here.
Ah, but they wouldn't print ours.
Oh, I don't know. The Sunday Press sometimes print about curates and choir boys, you know.
And that's bloody dull, too.
I thought it wasn't dull to you.
God, a chap's got to do something, hasn't he? Else he'd go raving mad. Anyway, you're no one to talk.
What do you mean?
That Siamese prince.
Purely platonic.
Oh, that's funny.
What's funny?
Well, if you were in the classical six, you'd learn what platonic really meant.
Leave it a purely, then.
No.
I wonder what our parents think we do between the ages of 13 and 18.
What we do, I imagine.
It's such damn humbug. No female of our age will look at us, and any female older than us isn't allowed to have us. Look at this Mrs. Rattenbury.
I can't. You've given the paper away. Is she attractive?
Damned attractive, and not so old, really. I mean, 38.
Yeah. How often did they do it?
Well, a lot. You see, he first lived out of the house. Then about 6 weeks later, she asked him to live in.
Oh.
So they must have done it before that.
Yeah.
Gosh, I almost envy him. I mean, at least he'll have lived.
You're wanted.
My grandma.
Now your solicitor.
What, again? I told him everything.
Don't suppose he thinks so, and they never do. Besides, this time he's got a barrister with him. Wood, gentlemen.
Oh, thank you, Warder. We'll ring when we're finished.
Very good, Mr. Harvey. Mr. Caswell, sir.
How are you, Wood?
No complaints.
I see by your reports that you're continuing to put on weight. 8 pounds since you came here. That's good.
Good for the hangman, too.
I don't care for those kind of jokes. This is Mr. Caswell, who is defending you at the Old Bailey.
I know, I've heard.
And at some personal sacrifice, I may say.
I expect so. I don't suppose you pulled down much of a screw under the poor prisoner's defence thingamy.
No. Harvey, perhaps you'll allow a brief of legal etiquette and amuse yourself with a punch in the waiting room.
As you please, sir.
Do you make a lot of jokes about being hanged?
Well, one's got to see the funny side, don't one?
One meaning yourself?
Precise, you legal gentlemen are, aren't you?
We are taught to be, Mr. Wood. You are of age to be hanged. Why do you make jokes about it?
Look, if you're trying to put the wind up me, Mr. Castles, or whatever the name is...
Caswell.
Caswell. Well, it just won't work. I don't scare, you see? Mr. Harvey will tell you that. If you want to know why I make jokes about my hanging, it's mostly to annoy Mr. Harvey.
Why should you wish to do that?
Because he don't believe my story.
Perhaps I will. Would you tell it to me?
It's in those notes you've got there, right in front of you.
It may be, but I'd like to hear it from you.
Where shall I begin?
Perhaps the night of March the 24th of this year.
All right. I'll come straight to the point. Mrs. Rattenbury had nothing to do with it. I'd done everything myself. She didn't know till afterwards, and when I told her, she threw a fit.
What did you tell her?
That I'd banged her old husband 3 times on the head with a mallet and most likely killed him.
I see. Did you tell her why you'd done this?
You bet I told her why. I said I'd seen her having... what's a polite word for it?
Connection?
Connection. Connection. With her husband that afternoon, after tea up in her room.
Seen?
All right. Let's be precise, then.
It would be better.
I heard. That door, the door into her bedroom, that was always kept open, see? She had something propping it open because her dog used to go in and out, and whenever her little nipper was there, the small one, 5, 6-year-old, she was specially careful to keep it open because he'd be in and out all the day. Little bastard. And the other one, the 13-year-old one, Christopher, he'd be worse. Just learnt what it was for, you see. Bloody nuisance they were.
I can imagine.
Well, that's why she and me never did anything in the daytime when they were there, see?
But on the afternoon of March the 24th, it was Little John who was in the house, not Christopher.
Christopher was at school. Mm-hmm. Little John was all over the house, as per, shouting his head off, turning somersaults, screaming for his mummy or his daddy. Well, you know what little bleeders of his age are like. And this was 5 o'clock in the afternoon, mind you. The little sod out in the garden in full blast.
And after you'd brought Mr. and Mrs. Rattenbury their tea, the door to her bedroom was closed?
Yes.
Locked?
Needn't be, need it. The chauffeur's no right to go opening doors.
With Mr. Rattenbury still inside?
Yes. Well, that may be suspicious for a start. He never had tea in her bedroom before. It was as much as he could do to climb those stairs. Never ever left ground floor level, which is where his bedroom was.
Of course. How long was that door closed that afternoon?
Long enough.
For what?
For... what was that word?
Connection.
Connection.
But I understand the old gentleman was no longer capable.
Yes. And that's what I understood, too. But he was capable that afternoon, all right? All right?
You heard the sounds of sexual intercourse. I asked of sexual intercourse.
Not so polite now, are we?
Why didn't you interrupt?
Oh, I know my place. Just a servant, that's all. And the next day I was supposed to drive them off on their second honeymoon as a chauffeur and be given a servant's room, probably sharing and having dinner in the servant's hall. Oh, no, thank you, I said to myself. No bloody thank you, Mr. and Mrs. Rattenbury, I said.
That would be, have been, their projected visit to their friend, Mr. Jenks, at Bridport.
That's right. Hmm. They'd have shared a room there as man and wife, see?
I understand that Mrs. Rattenbury says that Mr. Jenks has 2 guest rooms in his house and that the understanding always was they should not share the room.
Mrs. Rattenbury is a bloody liar. Yes. Oh, we've made a heavy note there, haven't we? All right. You can quote me, and you can quote this. Mrs. Rattenbury, drunk and sick, mad bloody cow that she is. It's the only woman I've ever loved or ever will. Get that?
Yes. I understand that before you met Mrs. Rattenbury, you didn't have much experience of women.
That's right. Past a blank and future a bloody nothing. Is that what you meant, Mr. Caswell?
No. I was taking down your words.
Well, you better amend that statement. Yeah, that's a phrase I've learnt lately. Take this down. Mrs. Rattenbury is the only woman I ever had, and who also is, for obvious reasons, the only woman I ever will have. I think she's a liar and a cheat and a drunk, and it'd have been a great thing for us both if I'd never met her. But I love the bitch.
Still love her?
Still, Mr. Caswell. You don't believe me, do you?
It is my duty to believe my clients. Now, let's go back. You say you told Mrs. Rattenbury you had banged her husband 3 times on the head and most likely killed him. What time did you tell her you had done this?
Directly after I'd done it.
Directly after? Didn't you first go into the garden and dispose of the mallet?
Yes, that's true.
How long did that take you?
Well, I had to find a place to hide. It'd say about 10 minutes. Went upstairs to my room.
Did you undress?
Yes.
Then what did you do?
Went into Mrs. Rattenbury's room and told her what I'd done.
Did you tell her at once?
No. It took me time. It's not something you say straight off, darling, I've killed your husband.
Describe the scene.
Well, I took my pajamas off.
The silk ones she bought you on your trip to London?
Yes. She liked me in them, but she preferred me out of them.
She was expecting you?
Of course.
Hello, darling. Late, aren't you? It's no way to treat 3 guinea pajamas. Fold them up properly, there's a good boy. Why the light out? Turned all modest all of a sudden, have we?
In trouble, Alma.
What again? How much have you lost on the horses this time?
Real trouble.
Real trouble? There's no such thing, that's what I always say. It's a lovely life, darling. You mustn't let worry spoil it. Come on, look at me and tell me, what is it?
I can't tell you.
Is it that bad?
It's worse than that bad. It's terrible.
You mustn't cry, dear. Nothing's worth that. What is it? Is it something to do with that row we had downstairs about rats and me going to the Jenks? But there are 2 guest rooms. I've told you and told you.
I don't believe you. Anyway, what about me and the servants all treated like dirt while you and old rats are making whoopee like the old time does?
God, how often do I have to tell you? Rats can't do it anymore. Not for 6 years, not since I had little John.
You lying cow!
No, darling. Cow, I may be. It just depends on how you see me. But lying, never. In all these 5 months, I've never told a lie. Never.
Why was that door shut?
I've told you I don't know. A gust of wind must have caught it.
A gust of wind? I know what you were up to. Well, you won't be up to it again, and that's not a lie. I tell you that.
George, what have you done?
I can't tell you.
You must tell me.
You won't be able to bear it.
Oh, yes. I've borne a lot of things in this life. I'm quite strong enough to bear your troubles now as well as mine. You've had a fight with rats, is that it?
Not a fight. No. Oh, God, Alma, forgive me.
You've hurt him?
Yes.
Badly?
Yes.
How?
He was asleep in his chair downstairs. I had a mallet in my hand.
Oh, my God, no. Oh, what's that?
It must be him. I thought he was dead.
Oh, God, poor rats.
Don't go down.
But I must go, Jamie. He's hurt. I must help him.
Don't now.
I must. I'm coming, Ratsy. I'm coming, darling.
Hellman, don't go down. You won't like what you see.
Irene! Irene!
What is it?
Get a doctor!
And then you went down?
Yes.
At once?
Well, I finished my cigarette first. I know that sounds heartless, but it wasn't. I knew we couldn't help him. I knew he was done for.
You knew that, did you?
Well, it stands to reason. He was an old chap, 67, and I'd hit him hard, real hard.
Yes. When you did go downstairs, what did you find?
Well, she was in a fine state, Mrs. Rattenbury. She was kneeling on the floor, in the blood and all, crying out, "Oh, poor rats, poor rats, poor rats," over and over again. She was trying to put his false teeth in. They'd fallen out on the carpet, and every time she put them back, they'd fall out again. She was in a fine old state, I tell you. I had to give her a stiff whiskey, although I never approved of her drinking, but this was special, and she'd no sooner got it down than she was sick all over the place, and I had to give her another.
Which she kept down?
Yes, that one she did. From that moment on, she went on and on until she had the best part of a bottle. And all the time she kept saying, "Oh, poor rats," and trying to get his teeth back, until Irene stopped her.
Then what did you do?
I helped carry him from the chair to his bed. And that's no easy job, I can tell you. In fact, the women weren't much use. I had more or less to carry him myself.
What were your thoughts when you were more or less carrying him to his bed?
My thoughts? Now, you know I can't tell you that now, can I?
Why can't you?
Because I didn't have any thoughts, did I? Not the whole of that night. Not responsible for any of my actions. I was crazed, see?
Crazed? Crazed with what?
Look, it must be there in front of you. Those are Mr. Harvey's notes, aren't they?
Yes, indeed. Well, I'm afraid I can see nothing here about your not being responsible for your actions on the night of March the 24th.
Look, it's got to be down there. Doesn't it say anything about dope?
What dope?
Well, the cocaine I took. You mean he hasn't even bothered to write it down?
Apparently not. Perhaps he didn't think it important.
Important? 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 Jesus Christ, it's the most important bloody thing in the whole bloody world. It's just my whole bloody defense, that's all.
Is it? Is it indeed? Your whole defense? Well, perhaps I'd better get it done. What is this about cocaine?
I was under its influence that night. That's what.
The whole night?
Well, when I swatted him anyway, I was confused. I was under the influence. See? I didn't know what I was doing. All that.
And when you went to borrow that mallet from your grandmother, were you under the influence then?
Well, I must have been, mustn't I? It stands to reason.
I suppose it does. But your grandmother says here that you stayed with her half an hour and talked perfectly normally with her about such things as what was going to win the Grand National.
Ah, but that's what's so pernicious about cocaine, see? On the outside, it makes you seem perfectly normal, but on the inside, your mind's just seething.
Seething with what?
More terrible, confused thoughts.
Such as how to kill your mistress's husband?
If you like. Yes. But confused, see? Always confused.
Borrowing a mallet for that purpose, concealing it after the crime in the garden, and trying to make it look as if some outsider had committed the murder, that was being confused too, was it?
Well, of course. You don't know what this drug does to one's mind, Mr. Caswell. It's a terrible drug. Really it is. But you can think quite clear with it. Well, that's what's so pernicious.
Yes. How much of it did you take that night?
2 heaped egg cupfuls. That's a large dose.
Very large. About enough to poison the entire Romanian army, I would say.
But I was an addict, see?
Yes. To take that dose and stay alive, you must have been. I would reckon you would have had to have been taking it regularly for about 10 years.
Yes. I started very young.
When you were about 8?
Something like that.
Yes. Who started you on it?
Well, no one really started me. I found it and took it by accident.
Where did you find it?
In my dad's medicine chest in the bathroom.
It's a wonder you could reach it.
I was tall for my age.
And your father was an addict?
No. I expect he was taking it as a medicine.
For what?
How would I know? It just looked like nice stuff, so I thought I'd have a sniff.
Why a sniff, Mr. Wood?
Well, that's how you take cocaine. Everyone knows that. Even at 8, I knew that.
Really? How?
I'd read about it in magazines and things. I was forward for my age, you see.
Forward and tall. The bottle was labelled cocaine, then?
No. It wouldn't have been, would it? A dangerous drug, something like that.
Yes, how did you know it was to be sniffed, then?
Well, from the look of it, of course. I mean, you could tell it was cocaine just from the look.
Tell me, what does it look like?
Well, you can't mistake it.
I think you said that before.
Did I? Well, you can't, you see. It's powder.
Yes. What distinguishes it from, say, talcum powder?
The colour.
I see. And what is the colour?
Brown.
Brown? What shade?
Medium. And then it has these black specks in it.
With black specks in it. I see. I wonder why it's called snow.
Beg pardon?
Snow. That's a slang term for cocaine. Surely you must know that. Harvey, come in, would you? Please tell Mr. Wood, Harvey, why the slang term for cocaine is snow.
Because the powder is white.
Is it ever sold in any other color?
No. No, if it were not white, the purchaser would never accept it.
So that, Mr. Wood, is your whole defense, is it? Don't you think you should apologize to Mr. Harvey?
What for?
Trying to annoy him for daring to disbelieve your story, and by making bad and painful jokes about hanging. If you must die, as you seem determined to, can't you at least die with dignity?
And how do I do that?
By allowing us to tell the truth on your behalf. And then from the witness box by telling the truth yourself.
What's the truth? I'd be glad to hear that, I'm sure.
That you killed Mr. Rattenbury in a fit of insane jealousy because you believed, mistakenly, that he had usurped your rights as a lover.
You think that's a defense?
It could be.
How?
I could plead your youth, your inexperience, the bad influence you were under.
Ah, that'll bring her in, won't it?
I'll have to bring her in anyway.
Not as a bad influence, you don't.
Ring the bell, Harvey. I will have to bring her in as the woman you loved and still love.
How did you get on?
Not too well, I'm afraid. Yes, I'm afraid he beat me. Pity. You see, I'd reckoned on his vanity, on his infantilism, on his false heroics, and on his very real fear of death. In all that, I was right, I think. But I left out one thing, and it's the thing that will ditch us in the end, I'm afraid.
What's that, sir?
The genuineness of his love for a drunken, sex-mad, bloody cow. That being his description of his co-defendant.
No, I think they'd look better by the window, after all. Thank you, Gladys. Yes, I was right.
Hello, Mrs. Davenport.
Hello, Miss Wilkinson.
So, you've gone and bought flowers for your son, have you?
Aren't they lovely?
Quite beautiful. The sad thing is that boys so seldom appreciate flowers.
My boy does.
An unusual type of boy, is he?
I wouldn't say so. A little further to the right, Gladys. Thank you.
That oriental little chap was asking for him again.
Prince Fenlon?
He's a prince, is he? Oh, but in the Far East, they all call themselves princes.
Do they? This one is the nephew of the king.
King? What king?
Of an am, I think, although I'm never quite sure. He's a schoolfellow of my son's.
He looks much younger than 17. Isn't your son 17?
They are apt to look younger in the Far East. What did the prince want?
Just to know when your Tony was arriving, that's all. Apparently they had a date to meet in London. Doing the halls, as he put it.
I hope you told him.
Frankly, I thought you'd rather I didn't. I mean, you can't really trust Orientals, can you? East is east and west is west.
And never the twain shall meet. Oh, dear, I do hope I don't have to ring up the Annam legation and apologise.
I'm sorry, but he didn't say he was a prince.
Princes rarely do. Was there anything else, Miss Wilkinson?
Oh, some post for you, sent on from the Cornwall Gardens Hotel.
Thank you.
The On His Majesty's Service looks important. It has urgent, if absent, please forward. And it's dated over 2 weeks ago. They're slack at that hotel, I always did say. Shall I open it?
Thank you, I'll open it first.
Funny time for your son to come visiting you, Mrs. Davenport. His holidays must have started over 2 weeks ago.
They did. He's been staying with friends.
Oh, really? You saw him before he left, I suppose.
No, he went straight out to the south of France from school.
He can look after himself, then?
Yes.
What time are you expecting him? I have to know because of the tables.
I hope to see him before dinner. If not, I'll let you know.
You don't know what time his train arrives?
I don't even know if it is a train.
A plane? Well, aren't we modern? Of course, planes can arrive at any time.
And we've got the special Dandon Lorraine tonight.
I will let you know in good time, Miss Wilkinson. Thank you very much. So kind of you to bring up my post. Temple Bar 0329, please. Could I speak to Sir Harold? Mrs. Davenport. Harold, I'm being a nuisance, but I've had a call for jury service. You know, fail not at your peril, etc. April the 15th, that's next Monday. 2 weeks, it says, and I've got it late because of moving hotels. I know, it's musical hotels for me. Well, there are reasons. No, the thing that makes it impossible is that Tony is coming to me tonight, and I was going to take him up to Scotland on Sunday. St. Andrews for the amateur golf championship. You know how mad he is about golf. And I've got rooms. You don't think that's enough excuse? Well, what's the poor boy to do all by himself in this ghastly hotel for 2 weeks? Central Criminal Court. You can't do anything. Is there anyone who might? No, I understand that. It's in the summons. Serious illness, lunacy, being a peer of the realm, there's a whole lot. But what about special hardship? Not that kind of hardship. Well, I don't know what could be worse. I agree. We've got a lot to hate Mrs. Pankhurst for. Send him up to St. Andrews on his own, but won't he be lonely? Yes, boys make friends easily, I know, and that's what I'm afraid of. There are lots of undesirable girls up there, at St. Andrews, as anywhere else. Am I, Harold? Too possessive? Well, when one only has one possession.
I think we're coming into land at Croydon.
Gosh, it's exciting seeing London from up here. That's Wimbledon down there. Look, look, Dan, there's the centre court right there, see?
Yes.
Oh, of course, you've done this a lot, I keep forgetting.
Too much.
Might I ask you to finish your champagne, gentlemen?
Are we landing?
From the angle of our descent, I would certainly say so.
Hold on to everything.
No need to do that, sir. The captain has the whole area to choose from. The grass is always kept in excellent condition. A little bumpy sometimes, but in April, of course, no matter.
What's our landing speed?
I have never inquired, sir, but I fancy it to be in the region of 40 miles an hour, there or thereabouts. Quite painless, you see, sir. If I might look out of your window. Yes, you wind it down, sir, as in a Pullman. Yes, our Imperial Airways standard has been hoisted. The captain works it by electricity from his cabin, and it always denotes the successful termination of our flight. Thank you, gentlemen. Happy to have served you.
Well, Tony, I'm afraid this is goodbye.
Aren't you coming with me to Mum's hotel?
No, better not. Sorry, old son.
It's a different hotel. Why does she keep changing?
I have no idea. You have the new address?
Yes, Dad.
You'd better take the airport bus to Victoria Air Terminus and get a taxi on from there.
You've got a car?
Yes, the company car, but there'll be people meeting me, and I'd rather...
I understand.
Sorry.
That's all right, Dad. Can I ask one thing?
Yes?
Mum always talks to me, well, sometimes talks to me, about that woman, etc., etc.
Yes?
Well, there isn't any that woman, is there? I mean, I've been with you for 3 weeks, and I'm not half-witted.
No, you're not.
I mean, there were no broken-off telephone calls, like Mum does sometimes when she's talking about you or me, and a burst of French like, il est entré, oui, lui-même, le gosse, c'est ça, etc. I often wonder why you send us to expensive schools to learn French, and then, when you don't want us to understand something, speak it a bit worse than even we do. Dad... Is there any that woman?
No.
Passengers may now alight and proceed to the customs building.
D-
then why not tell her?
It's better for her to think that there is a that woman. Come on.
Pardon me, please. Only a short walk to passport control.
I don't understand, Dad.
I didn't think you would, Tony.
But if there's no one else, serious, that is, couldn't you tell her?
I'd like to, Tony. For your sake as much as mine. Perhaps more for your sake. But it's just not possible.
You still love Mum, don't you?
Passport, please. British dominions and imperial subjects this way. Aliens, join the queue, please.
Don't you?
Yes, I do.
Well, then.
Love is a portmanteau word, Tony. It covers so many things. The kind of love I have for your mother isn't quite the kind she has for me.
But she does love you, Dad. I know that.
So do I, but her love falls rather short of something I still need. Perhaps I shouldn't need it still, but I do.
Thank you, sir. And this is your son?
Yes.
Thanks after you, sir.
I'm glad.
Porter, gentlemen?
Thank you.
On the taxi, sir.
And now I have a car meeting me, and my son's travelling by the bus.
Yes, sir.
Try to get him the seat next to the driver.
Certainly, sir.
Well, goodbye, Dad.
Goodbye, Tony. I'll be thinking of you.
Thank you for a marvellous time.
A bit dull, I'm afraid.
Oh, not kind. That was smashing.
You didn't like Paris?
Well, a bit disappointing.
Disappointing? The Champs-Élysées, the Rue de Rivoli?
Oh, no, all that side of it was fine. I just meant...
Just meant what?
Well, don't think I'm ungrateful, Dad, but you did promise to take me to a... To a... You know, that... House of all nations?
Tony, I did remember that. It's just that I'd forgotten you were underage. Legally, I mean.
You could have said I was 18.
You have to take your passport, you see.
A passport to a brothel?
Well, they're strict about underage.
Oh, God, even in France. I'll have to try Turkey or somewhere.
Why Turkey? Why not German Street?
All aboard, please.
Well, goodbye again.
Dad, what shall I tell Mum about that woman?
Tell her you didn't meet her, but I was always talking to her on the telephone.
I don't understand why you want to make her unhappy with a lie.
It doesn't make her unhappy, Tony. It's the truth that would do that.
I don't understand. Really, I don't.
It's a question of pride. Look, here's a fiver. It might come in handy.
Oh. Thanks awfully, Dad.
Here we are. Cost you £5.
Isn't that rather expensive?
I'm French, you see.
Ah, oui. All right.
Oh, I'm a bit out of breath. Sorry. Been working hard lately. Listen, how old are you?
20.
Yeah, they all say that. How old are you? Honest.
Nearly 18.
I swear you're over 16.
I swear.
I once got caught with a 15-year-old. Cheeky little bastard. In the street, too. £2 fine for soliciting, plus 3 months in the nick for underage. My Fred was not mad.
Your Fred?
My friend. My protector, you could call him. Like a father to me, he is.
Is he really?
Well, it's not the Ritz, but it's homey.
Mais c'est charmant, votre appartement, mademoiselle. Il est très bien décoré, avec ses draps de jeu.
What's all that about?
I thought you were French.
French trained, dear. Money on the mantelpiece, please. That's right. Lights on or off?
Off, I think.
Oh, a bit shy, are you? This your first time?
Oh, no, I'm always doing it.
Oh, good. I'll get your clothes off. I haven't got all afternoon, you know. Put one of these on. Gin, dear? Mother's Ruin. I work better on it. Oh, for God's sake, get undressed.
I'm sorry, I...
You only need your trousers, dear, nothing else.
Look, couldn't I stay and talk a little first?
Oh, talk? Oh, what are you paying me a fiver for? A little light conversation?
I'm sorry. You see, I lied just now. This is my first...
Oh, good, I do, Pickham. Come over here, dear. I'll fix things for you.
No.
No?
You see, that's just the kind of thing I'm trying to get away from. I'm sure if you'll just leave it for a bit, I'll be all right.
A bit? How long's that?
Well, it could be just a few minutes, or it could be half an hour.
Oh, it could be all night. I know you first-timers. I'll want another fiver, dear.
I haven't got that.
Oh, then it's finished, love. Now poo. In my profession, time is money, le temps c'est la monnaie. Sorry, dear, but you ought to find a nice older woman. Amateur, like, kind. They often go for your sort, and of course they have patience. I'm afraid patience is the one thing I can't afford. Goodbye, dear. Come back in 10 years' time.
You've hardly touched your dandan, Lorraine.
Sorry, ma'am. Not awfully hungry.
A little air sickness?
Oh, no, I love the flight. Seeing London from the air, it's like nothing I've ever experienced.
Then is it perhaps the shock of hearing that we're going ahead with the divorce?
No, it isn't that. But could I ask you a question, ma'am?
Of course.
If you found out that there wasn't another woman at all, would it make any difference?
I can't explain it to you, darling. You're far too young to understand.
That isn't true. I'm sorry, Mum, but I'm not a child anymore to be comforted and lied to about the facts of life. I consider myself an adult.
It's not what you consider yourself that matters. It's what we consider you.
And that's utter nonsense. It's everything that's wrong with my generation and with yours. It's an outrage against nature, that's what it is, to treat a 17-year-old as if he were still 7.
Tony, have you been drinking?
Yes, 3 ports.
With your father?
No, by myself, in a bar in Jermyn Street.
That's not allowed to a boy of 17.
I know. There are far too many things that aren't allowed to boys of 17.
And why in Jermyn Street?
Never mind. Mum, try and see me as at least half grown up and tell me what went wrong between you and Dad.
Well, it's very difficult. Even to a half-grown-up.
I realize that, Mum. Please believe me. I understand much more than you know.
Oh, Tony, you've changed.
No. Just 3 months older than when you last saw me, that's all. What went wrong?
What did your father say went wrong?
He never said a word against you, I promise.
Against me? That means you think he could have.
Well, I don't know, of course, mind you, but couldn't he?
In these things, the blame is never all on one side. I was married too young, I suppose. And in India, it wasn't then considered quite right to tell a young bride all she should know about, well, certain things.
I understand.
I hated it. I hated that side of it from the very beginning. Perhaps if I'd been told. But I don't think it would have made all that much difference. Your father's... what should we call it to make it sound polite? Appetites were very strong. I would say unnaturally strong.
Is there anything unnatural about a man or a woman wanting something that his nature tells him to want?
I don't want to talk any more about it, Tony, if you don't mind.
That's all right. We've made an advance anyway.
To me, it isn't an advance. Oh, I've so much to ask you. But first of all, I've a bit of bad news. I've been summoned to serve on a jury from tomorrow.
Sounds rather fun.
It's horrible, but it must be done.
What's the case, do you know?
No, they never tell you till you get there. Probably a lot of motoring offences. But it means I'll be stuck in London all this week and the week after. So I'm afraid St. Andrews...
Oh, Mum, don't say that's off.
Well, I won't be able to go, Tony.
Oh, bad luck. I'll go alone, then.
I was wondering if you couldn't ask some school friends.
Oh, not a hope. They'll all be with their families somewhere.
What about Prince Fenlong?
How did you hear about him?
He's been round here several times.
Has he?
Yes, he said you'd asked him to come and see you in the holidays.
Did mention something?
Well, I'm sure he'd go.
To watch golf? I shouldn't think in his country they've ever heard of it.
I talked to him. I believe he'd go anywhere in the world you went.
He gave you that impression, did he?
He's been popping in every other day. I'm sure he'd go.
The Siamese prince. It's an idea.
He's not Siamese. He's Annamite.
I know, but no one can remember that. They all look the same anyway.
That isn't true, you know. This Prince Fenlong is one of the most beautiful little boys I've ever seen.
Mum, boys aren't beautiful.
Well, it seems silly to call someone who looks about 10 handsome.
He's quite old, really.
Yes, I realise that, or he'd hardly be calling you Tony. What do you call him?
Chinky. Not very original. Mum, can I go and ring him up?
Yes, of course. We've finished anyway. He's staying at the Ritz.
I know. I think he's got a whole floor.
Oh, gracious. Well, I hope one small room at the Heatherview Private Hotel St. Andrews will be all right for him. And without a bath.
It will, Mum. Don't worry.
Everything all right, Mrs. Davenport?
Splendid. Thank you, Miss Wilkinson.
Your boy didn't eat his dandelion Lorraine.
Overexcitement, I expect.
Yes, I thought he sounded rather overexcited.
Ah, there's the news. I mustn't miss that.
Coffee, Mrs. Davenport?
Two, please.
That was your son at dinner, wasn't it?
Yes.
This is the national program.
I do hope your boy wasn't being too difficult.
No, not at all, Mrs. Blubworthy.
I couldn't help overhearing a little. One tries not to, of course.
Of course.
But at that age, they are so loud-voiced. An awkward age, I always say, don't you agree?
Not particularly. Excuse me, I want to listen to the news.
Germany, he said, was in no position to answer Mr. Henderson's appeal. A queue, estimated by the police at several hundred, has already formed at the Central Criminal Courts, London, where tomorrow, April the 15th, George Alfred Wood and Alma Victoria Rattenbury face charges of the murder of Francis Mawson Rattenbury at the Villa Madeira, Bournemouth, in March of this year.
Oh, no.
Although the public gallery in court number one will only accommodate a fraction of the crowd now waiting.
Central Criminal Courts, there are three others, aren't there, besides court number one?
What, dear?
There are four courts at the Old Bailey, aren't there?
I don't know, my dear. I've always managed to stay clear of trouble.
Oh, God, let it not happen.
Linley, close all the windows and pull the blinds down now, please.
Yes, Waters.
Oh, dear, I was so enjoying that little glimpse of London.
You'll have it again, my dear, on the way back. We're only a few minutes from the Old Bailey, you see.
I know. I recognise the Strand, dear. Savoy Hotel and the Gaiety Theatre. Where do you think I've spent all my life? In a nunnery?
Hardly.
Oh, Joan, you are a scream. I love it when your mouth sets like that. Oh, dear. I'm ever so nervous. Do I look all right? They're bound to comment, aren't they? I mean, they always do. The prisoner was smartly dressed in a navy blue suit and close-fitting blue toque. Oh, I do wish they'd let me wear my pink pillbox. Of course, on the day they do the sentencing...
Don't talk about the sentencing. That's not going to happen.
Where do they put me during the trial? I mean, is there a room I'm taken to?
Yes, under the dock. It's quite comfortable. And you can have your meals sent in.
Will he be there?
Not in the same cell.
Good. I don't think I could have borne that.
Of course he'll be in the dock with you.
I know. I can face that. We won't have to speak. Whatever's that noise?
We're arriving, miss. Good. Look at that crowd. I never saw anything like it. They've got the mounted police out.
Better wait a minute, Johnson. Yeah. The police have seen us. They're making a path.
Why couldn't they have got us up here an hour earlier?
It wouldn't have made no difference, miss. This lot's been waiting all night. It's on the wireless.
Now, dear, you mustn't be nervous. You're not going to be hurt. The three of us will see to that. Not to mention about 50 policemen. Linley, when I give the signal, open that door.
Right, miss.
Not yet, though.
Why should they want to hurt me?
I've no idea, but you've got to be brave now.
Yes.
I know you are brave, my dear. I haven't been with you so long, I haven't cottoned on to that.
Well, I thought I was, but
This is different. All right, Lindley. Now.
Right.
Lindley, you ahead.
Yes, Miss.
Johnson behind.
Yeah, right.
You, dear, hold on to me. And close your ears, my dear. Push, Lindley.
Come on.
Get out of the way, you old cow.
Come on.
Come on, you won't forget. Come on. Yes, you will. And I'll wallop you on the ground with your own handbag. You call yourself a man? Ever looked at yourself naked in a long mirror and counted them? All right, dear. Only 2 yards to go. Push, Lindley.
Yes, miss. Come on.
Out of the way, you fat bastard.
You take your hands off, my man.
Right, come on. Give us some. Oh, dear, we're nearly through.
Bloody morons.
Swearing our duty, officer. And the safe for you with knobs on you, old bitch. There we are, dear. I'm sorry. A cup of coffee will make you feel better.
Joan?
Yes?
Why?
Oh, it takes all sorts to make a world.
But why do they hate me?
Well, it's... It's not the first time I've seen it. Never as bad, of course. But you know what I think it is? I think it's envy.
Why should they envy me now?
No, dear. They don't envy you now. We'll find our cell, shall we?
Hello, Mr. Caswell.
Hello, Wood.
That big crowd out there. You know, when I arrived, some of them applauded.
Did they?
And one or two of them shouted... Good luck, boy. We're on your side. And don't you worry, kid. We won't let you swing. Things like that.
I shouldn't set too much store by what they shout out there. It's what they're going to think in here that matters.
Still in awe, juries are made from people like those out there, aren't they?
I hope not, for the sake of justice. Those people out there are the dregs of humanity.
But still, they're human.
Hardly. We have only half an hour before you go on trial for your life. Are you still quite determined to instruct me that you committed this act of murder while under the influence of cocaine? Yeah.
Feels good for a bloke like me to hear that word, instruct. Yes, Mr. Caswell, KC, those are my instructions.
I am not a KC.
I'm still your client.
Yes.
Stupid odd job boy has come a long way, hasn't he? Instructing someone in striped trousers, stiff shirt and a morning coat... Yeah, well, I instruct you, Mr. Bloody Caswell, and anyone else who cares. I done the old boy in when I was crazed from a pernicious drug. Because there's no other way I could have done it. It wasn't me who did that thing, it was a dope fiend. Dope fiend, Mr. Caswell. Will you make a note of that?
I don't think I need to.
Make a note of it.
I have done so.
Just a minute. How is she?
I have no idea.
They're not going to find her guilty, are they?
I should think it very probable.
They say she's still trying to shield me.
I believe so.
Tell her not to. Tell her I can fight my own battle.
I shall do no such thing. And as for your battle, I'm the one who is going to fight it, not you.
Under my instructions.
I already have them. You were crazed from cocaine and were not responsible for your actions. I will see you in court.
Yes.
I would most strongly advise you not to go into the witness box.
Why not?
The prosecution have mustered a formidable array of experts on cocaine addiction, and I would not wish to submit you to the ordeal of explaining how, at the age of 8, you managed to become a dope fiend.
Ah, Mrs. Rattenbury, how are you feeling?
Oh, not too bad, Mr. O'Connor. Kind of you to come and see me. Well, we've got a nice day for it, haven't we?
I'm sorry you let those morons out there upset you.
I shouldn't have. It was silly. It's a free country, isn't it? If people feel like that, it's quite right for them to show it, I suppose. Only, I don't quite understand why they should feel like that. I mean, as strongly as that.
No. Well, our jury will be quite different, I know.
Will it? Well, it doesn't matter much, does it?
Yes, it does. The case against you is all surmise. They will say that because you were 20 years older than Wood, that you must have dominated him.
Dominated? Oh, well, that's a laugh if they knew. It was he who dominated me because he was 20 years younger.
That's a good point, and I shall make it. But, Mrs. Rattenbury, I repeat that the prosecution has no single fact that points to you as an accomplice in the murder. There's not even a motive. Nothing I can say will have any relevance unless it is supported by you in person. I earnestly hope you have decided to tell your whole story from the witness box.
No, Mr. O'Connor. I'm sorry. I can't do that. I've decided.
Your refusal to appear will have a most damaging effect, you know.
Yes, I know. I'm ever so sorry to let you and Mr. Montague down, but I can't. I really can't. I won't tell stories against George.
They aren't stories. They're the truth.
I know. That's why I can't tell them.
You prefer to be hanged for a murder you didn't commit.
Well, it seems to be what people want, doesn't it? I suppose I am better out of the way.
On the contrary. As regards the boy you're trying to protect, you're better acquitted and alive. If you go free, no Home Secretary will allow Wood to hang. The chances of a reprieve are 100 to 1.
There's always that one, isn't there? You see, Mr. O'Connor, neither you nor Mr. Montague yesterday could give me an absolute guarantee on that. And if I'm found guilty with him, then he can still get his reprieve, can't he?
The chances are far less likely.
Oh, I don't think so. Not now I know what they think about me. Anyway, I'm sure they'll never let me go free, Mr. O'Connor, and in a way they're right. I am responsible.
You are not responsible, Mrs. Rattenbury.
Well, if I hadn't met him, would he be facing a charge of murder?
Now, that cuts both ways. If you hadn't met him, would you?
You're very clever, Mr. O'Connor, and very nice, too, the way you care. And Mr. Montague, he seems to care as if it was something personal. He's such a dear, Mr. Montague. I'm sorry, but I've made up my mind. You two say what you can for me, but I'll say nothing for myself.
I see.
Is it time to go?
I was ringing for Montague. Last resort, Montague.
I'd have likely hoped we wouldn't have to use it.
So did I. Montague, you have a visitor for Mrs. Rattenbury?
Yes, sir. Come in.
Hello, Mommy.
Christopher. Oh, Christopher. Oh, you're looking fine, darling. You've grown, too.
Oh, yes, an inch.
I'll never forgive you for this. Never.
He wanted to come.
He was safe up in Hereford with his uncle. And you brought him through that crowd?
Oh, I didn't mind them, Mummy. They didn't mind me either. They didn't know who I was, you see. A reporter asked my name and I told him and he wasn't interested.
Do they know at school?
Oh, yes. But I've told everyone you didn't do anything and he did it all and you were just protecting him. They thought that was jolly sporting of you.
That's all they thought?
Oh, yes. Of course, I told them the truth would all come out at the trial and they'd let you go then. And when you come down to school again and watch me playing cricket like you used to, they won't mind you a bit. Mummy, it's not as if you'd been in a real prison. I've told them a remand place is quite different. More like a hotel, I said. And when I told them you got your meals sent in from outside, they were frightfully impressed and wanted to know what the meals were. So I said mushroom soup and smoked salmon and turkey and chocolate nut sundaes, which was all I could think of, but they were frightfully impressed. Really, Mummy, they were, you know.
Little John? Have you seen Little John?
Oh, he doesn't know anything. He thinks you're away on a holiday. Bit slow on the uptake, Little John.
Darling, he's only 6.
I know, one has to make allowances. Anyway, I told him you'll be back at the end of the week, and he's quite happy. No, don't worry about Little John.
No. No, I mustn't.
Mummy, don't cry. It's going to be all right. Mr. O'Connor swore to me it was going to be all right.
Mr. O'Connor shouldn't have done that.
Well, why not, Mummy?
It is going to be all right, isn't it?
Christopher, at school, you have a rule. I mean, not an official rule, but among yourselves, that it's bad, very bad, to tell on someone. Isn't that right?
Sneaking's bad, of course.
Well, there you are.
And you must never do it, except for one thing. Then you must.
What one thing?
If you hurt someone else by not doing it. Someone you're fond of, I mean. Someone you're really fond of.
Like you?
Don't forget little John, Mummy. He may be only a silly little boy now, but one day he'll grow up, same as me. I don't think I could ever get him to understand, however hard I tried. And then, well, you wouldn't be able to help me, would you?
No. Oh, God!
Time to go, young man.
You're not letting him into the court.
Of course not. He's catching the 10:45 back to Hereford. A solicitor's clerk will see him onto the train.
Goodbye, Mummy.
Goodbye, darling.
Aunt Jane wants you to come up there after the trial. She thinks the rest will do you good.
Thank her.
Mr. O'Connor says the trial should be over by Friday. Shall I tell her you'll come then?
Yes, darling. If I can.
Oh, you can, all right. Mr. O'Connor says you've only got to tell the truth. Isn't that right, Mr. O'Connor?
Perfectly right. I'll go with Mr. Montague. Water.
I will forgive you, you know.
You will, Mrs. Rattenbury, you will. And so will your children. Now, you have 10 minutes only. Wardress. Help her, would you? Bathe her eyes with something or whatever you do in these cases. I'm very glad, Mrs. Rattenbury. Very, very glad.
George, forgive me.
Alma Victoria Rattenbury and George Alfred Wood. You are charged with the murder of Francis Mawson Rattenbury on 28th March last. Alma Victoria Rattenbury, are you guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty.
George Alfred Wood, are you guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty.
Proceed to the swearing of the jury.
My lord.
Madam, I cannot hear you until you have been sworn.
I do not wish to be sworn. I wish to disqualify myself.
On what ground?
On the grounds of prejudice.
Against both or against one?
Against one. Mrs. Rattenbury.
Do you know her personally?
No, but I've read about her. And I confess now that I will not be able to judge her case fairly.
Because you do not like what you have read about her, those are not sufficient grounds.
I have a son of nearly the same age as the boy Wood. And I think that what she has done to him is outrageous.
These are issues still to be tried, madam. Mr. O'Connor, it seems to me, though, that you may have grounds for a challenge propter effectum. You wish to argue it?
What do you think, Montague?
No. She could be useful for your final address regarding the whole question of bias.
Good point.
No challenge, my lord. Mr. Caswell?
No, my lord. The lady is not admitted to any prejudice against my client.
You must be sworn, then. We find there are no grounds for self-disqualification.
Take the book in your right hand and read what is on this paper, beginning with your name.
I, Edith Amelia Davenport, do solemnly swear by Almighty God that I will well and truly try the issues joined between our Sovereign Lord the King and the prisoners at the bar, and will give a true verdict according to the evidence.
Now, Miss Riggs, the letter recently read out shows that your relationship with Mrs. Rattenbury was one of the greatest friendship.
Yes.
She addresses you as darling?
She often used to. Mind you, she was always very friendly with everybody she met.
This is a capital trial. Two people are on trial for their lives. If there is any further laughter, I will have the court cleared. Is that understood? Mr. O'Connor.
During the whole of the 4 years you have belonged to her household, have Mrs. Rattenbury's relations with her husband been perfectly friendly?
Yes.
Hardly a cross word?
Well, never from her.
Sometimes from him?
Well, he'd get a bit short with her sometimes, usually about money.
Just a bit short, not a real quarrel.
Oh, no. No, just little funny affairs. You know, the way most husbands and wives carry on.
What you might call little tuppenny halfpenny affairs.
Yes.
The suggestion has been made to you by my learned friend that Mr. Rattenbury strongly resented Wood's intrusion into the house. Is that true?
He grumbled a bit. I mean, one more mouth to feed, you know.
But only grumbled. There was no quarrel.
Oh, no.
Now, Miss Riggs, you have known for some time, have you not, that the relations between Mrs. Rattenbury and Wood were those of a woman and her lover?
Yes. I've already
said... We know what you've already said, Miss Riggs. We saw it on banner headlines at lunch.
It might help the jury to hear it again. They have not seen newspapers at lunch.
My lord, I consider that a most unwarranted and insufferable remark, and...
You asked the question, Mr. O'Connor.
With the deepest respect, my lord, I did not.
Then ask it.
Miss Riggs, was there any mystery about Mrs. Rattenbury's affair with Wood?
None at all.
I submit to you that Mr. Rattenbury both knew what was going on inside his house and that he accepted it without fuss.
Well, I don't think he even knew.
That is hard to credit, Miss Riggs, in so small a house.
Well, he was deaf in the first place, and then he liked his whiskey at nights very regular, and I think it... Well, Mrs. Rattenbury will explain it better. Well, I mean, that is, she's going in the box.
She is going in the box. Go on.
Well, I think he trained himself... not to know about these things, if you see what I mean.
You mean he had become indifferent to his wife's infidelities?
Yes, my lord.
Even when they were being performed a few feet above his head?
Well, he didn't think about it at all.
He didn't think about it at all.
Well, it sounds silly, I know.
And now, Miss Riggs, we come to Mrs. Rattenbury's words, if any, to you when she'd been arrested and was being taken to the police station. Did she say anything?
Yes. She said, look after little John and Christopher.
Anything else?
Yes. She whispered to me and said, tell George he must give me the mallet.
George being Wood?
Yes. Oh, I think it was, tell George he must tell me where he hid the mallet.
You, of course, didn't know what she was speaking about.
Will you tell your story in your own way, Constable?
Right, sir. But I use my notebook, sir.
Any objection? Use your notebook.
Yes, my lord.
Acting on instructions received, I proceeded to the Villa Madeira Manor Road, Bournemouth, arriving there at approximately 2 a.m. I was admitted by the prisoner Rattenbury, who was dressed in pyjamas. Her first words were... Oh, another lovely policeman. Come on in. There are plenty of other policemen inside, but none as lovely as you. The prisoner Rattenbury then kissed me on the mouth and led me into the house. I took the view that she was under the influence of an intoxicating beverage, identifiable from her breath as whiskey.
Was she drunk, Constable?
Well, I would not say drugs, not in the police sense. She was able to articulate. Then she attempted to kiss me once more, but I evaded the embrace and cautioned her.
Cautioned her about kissing you?
No, my lord, in the police sense. I said, I caution you. You are not obliged to say anything unless you wish to do so, but whatever you do say will be taken down and may be given in evidence. And she replied, I did it. I did it with a mallet. Rats had lived too long. No, my lover did it. Look, I will give you £10. No, that would be bribery, would not it? I will tell you in the morning where the mallet is.
Up to that moment, had a mallet been mentioned?
No, sir. The prisoner continued as follows. He dared me to kill him. I made a proper muddle of it. I thought I was strong enough. Goodness, you are a lovely man. I shall make a better job of it next time. Would you care to come upstairs? And I will show you some things you never knew.
Silence in court.
I declined the invitation and proceeded outside to summon assistance.
Car accidents, domestic accidents, fire accidents, some of them perhaps fatal?
Yes, sir.
You must then be familiar with that awesome medical phenomenon known as shock.
I've seen cases of shock, sir.
Severe shock?
Some severe.
How do persons usually behave?
Well, sometimes they're not quite all there.
Not quite all there? Not aware of their surroundings or of the identity of people ministering to them?
That is correct, sir.
Sometimes very excited and over-talkative.
Nearly always.
Inclined to weep and to laugh very easily, over-emotional, and generally to behave entirely out of character.
Yes, sir.
Aren't those symptoms exactly what you've just described to Mrs. Rattenbury on that dreadful night?
Mrs. Rattenbury was drunk.
You said she was not.
Well, I said not in the police sense.
No, and not in the medical sense either. Mrs. Rattenbury was in a state of shock, Constable, was she not?
I wouldn't know, sir.
Indeed, you would not. Thank you.
This might be a convenient time to adjourn. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, will you please not discuss this case with any of your family or friends? That is most important. You may, of course, discuss it among yourselves.
You have told the court, Inspector Wills, how you charged the accused Alma Rattenbury with the murder of her husband, and how she gave you a statement and read it back to you sitting on her bed. How did her voice seem? Was it slurred and indistinct?
It was strong and most distinct.
Did she make any comment?
Yes, sir. She said, "That is right. I did it deliberately and would do it again."
Now will you read us her statement?
At about 9 p.m. on Sunday the 24th of March, I was playing cards with my husband when he dared me to kill him as he wanted to die. I picked up the mallet. He then said, "You have not the guts to do it." I then hit him with the mallet. I hid the mallet. I would have shot him if I had had a gun. Signed, Alma Rattenbury.
Thank you, Inspector.
Mr. O'Connor?
What time did you first arrive at the Villa Madeira?
It was 3:30 a.m.
Where was Mrs. Rattenbury then?
In bed, sir.
How did you know?
Constable Barfield told me, sir.
Did he tell you why she was in bed?
He said the doctor had been and given her morphia.
Ah. Did you inquire how much morphia?
It didn't concern me, sir.
It didn't concern you that a woman from whom you were going to take a statement had had a massive, I repeat, massive, dose of morphia a few minutes previously?
She was awake at 8.
Awake? How much awake?
She seemed all right.
Seemed all right to you, impatient to get a statement from her. Did you inquire how much this wretched woman had had to drink that night?
I knew she had had a few.
A few? You didn't bother to find out that she'd had the best part of a bottle of whiskey?
She was perfectly compos mentis at 8:15 that morning.
Really? At 8:15 that morning? Compos mentis. Do you know that the medical officer at Holloway Prison has reported that she was under the influence of morphia and alcohol 3 days later?
No.
3 days later, Inspector? And you say that only some 5 hours later she was capable of making a statement of life and death?
That's all that I know.
Very well. Now, Mrs. Rattenbury, during these 4 days at the Royal Palace, London, you gave George Alfred Wood some expensive pajamas, and he gave you, I think, a ring.
With my money? I mean, the ring was only a pretense. We both knew that.
Yes, but a pretense of what?
Well, like an engaged couple.
Had he, in fact, proposed marriage?
Not seriously.
But he had mentioned it.
Yes.
Was this at the Royal Palace?
Yes.
What did you say?
I told him it was out of the question, that we were lucky enough as we were, and anyway we'd have no money to live on. Besides, I said I was fond of rats and wouldn't divorce him for anyone.
How did he take that?
He was angry.
You're just playing about with me, that's all.
That's not true, George. It really isn't.
I don't think I mean anything to you.
Well, what are we doing in this place, then?
Well, you're just being Lady Bountiful. It amuses you.
Lady Bountiful? Oh, really, dear, I'd like to know what I've got to be bountiful with.
You got 250 nicker from him for this, easy enough.
Easy? You call that easy? Getting a fiver out of him is like drawing a tooth.
He must have a lot tucked away.
He hasn't. Just his pension and some savings. Hardly 1,000 a year, I shouldn't think.
Savings? How much savings?
I don't know, dear. You know what I'm like about money.
Well, it'll come to you when he's dead, won't it?
Ask me another. Anyway, don't be so morbid. I don't like thinking about death.
And then there's the money you get from your songs.
I don't get more than a few bob for my songs, and you know it.
I don't know it? I think you lie to me.
I never have in my life.
You lie to your husband, don't you?
Only to get money for you, and for myself, too. And I don't like it. I hate it.
I think you'd have a fair amount of it if the old boy conked out.
The old boy's not going to conk out.
Funny if he divorced you.
Why should he?
Why should he? You sit in a big posh hotel dining room with your brother.
You're using the wrong fork.
I'll use what fork I like. Your brother, who's also your chauffeur and your lover. It's a wonder Rats hasn't done it before.
I've told you 100 times, Rats doesn't care. He leaves me to lead my life and doesn't bother. I don't think he even knows.
Well, he's got to know this time, hasn't he? Can't go skipping off for 4 days and expect him not to notice anything, can you?
Yes, I can. My husband seemed to know nothing about it.
You are asking the jury seriously to believe that your husband did in fact know nothing about this orgy in London?
Yes, I am.
That he didn't even ask how your operation went?
No, he didn't.
An operation that cost him £250.
But he was like that. Mind you, he might have realized that I'd been up to no good, but he just didn't want to know.
You would have us think that life went on quite normally after your return from London.
Well, it did. Little John came over on the Saturday, and we went to see my other son play cricket. And then Rats and I played cards, and then I went to bed.
With Wood?
Oh, yes, of course.
In your room or in his?
My room.
With little John in bed in the room?
Yes, but he was sound asleep.
With little John...
Have we not recorded that answer? Or is my learned friend at a loss for another question?
I am by no means at a loss for further questions, I think, my learned friend, as he will soon find out.
I am truly glad to hear it. My lord, with deep respect, I would like to entreat a chair for the witness. As your lordship will no doubt have seen, she is in a state of some physical distress.
By all means. Pray bring a chair for the witness.
Now, I want to be absolutely fair to you, Mrs. Rattenbury. When Wood in bed with you, with your little boy in the corner...
My lord, have we not had enough of the little boy in the corner?
I have not asked my question yet.
Please ask it, Mr. Croom Johnson.
When Wood told you that night that he'd hit your husband with a mallet, did you believe him?
No, not then.
When you went downstairs and found your husband had indeed been hit on the head, did you believe him then?
Well, one naturally would, wouldn't you?
You are here to answer my questions, not to ask them of me, madam.
I see. Well, I did believe that George had done it then.
It is my duty to submit to you that you knew Wood had done it because you'd encouraged him to do it. Well?
I'm sorry. Was that a question?
It was a question, Mrs. Rattenbury, and a very important one.
I thought I'd answered it. Still, if you want it again. I did not plot my husband's death. His death was a great shock to me. I have never in all my life harmed a human being.
You have never harmed a human being?
Not meaning to.
Thank you.
I'll only keep you a very few moments more, Mrs. Rattenbury. My learned friend seems surprised at your little boy's sleeping capacity. His cot was at the far end of the room, wasn't it?
Yes, and out of sight.
Was he a good sleeper?
A splendid sleeper. Nothing would waken him.
Mrs. Rattenbury, did you yourself murder your husband?
Oh, no.
Did you know a thing about it until Wood spoke to you in bed?
If I had known, I would have prevented it.
Thank you.
This is a convenient moment to adjourn. We will take the speeches tomorrow.
Mrs. Rattenbury, dear, forgive me saying it, but you don't look at all well.
Don't I?
I don't know why you let these horrid crowds worry you so much.
They don't any longer.
It's the verdict, is it? Well, try not to fuss too much, dear. Of course, that's easy to say, I know, but what I always tell my ladies is...
It isn't the verdict.
What is it, then? It's not him, is it?
No, not anymore.
The children?
I can't seem to feel about them either. Not what I felt about them when Christopher... When Christopher...
Oh, you see, you do feel about them just as you always did. This is only a passing phase.
Let it pass. Oh, God, let it pass.
Well, Mrs. Rattenbury, we did very well yesterday.
Did we?
I was very proud of you.
Thank you.
Is there any trouble, Wardress?
No, sir, no. I think we're perhaps a little tired.
And have every right to be. But just remember, Mrs. Rattenbury, your ordeal is nearly over. You have nothing more to do.
Except to listen.
Now, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you may or may not accept it when the accused says that she did not leave this innocent 17-year-old boy to take cocaine. But I ask you, having regard to what you know about the accused, his seducer, where else would he have learnt this pernicious habit that has now brought him to this grievous pass? He had come to live in a household where there was, on the evidence, a most extraordinary woman. Unbalanced, hysterical, drunken, of abnormal sexual appetite, and apparently of no moral conscience whatsoever.
A woman who, upon her own statement, has been coldly and methodically engaged in lying to her husband about money matters during the whole of their married life, and who then takes unto herself, with no thought for the outcome, a tender youth of 17, hitherto innocent of all vice and immorality, and still with a lad,
with a simple upbringing, few friends, and no girlfriends at all. He is flung, at the age of 17, into the vortex of illicit love. And then, suddenly, taken away from his work to live sumptuously at the Royal Palace Hotel, dressed in silk pajamas. And then, brought back to earth, cruelly, you may think, to his drudging duties and submitting to the orders of his mistress's husband. Is it any wonder that such a boy, blinded with sexual jealousy, should not, in some brainstorm, strike murderously at the man whose lawful conjugal rights separate them? Now, one of you, a lady, on entering the jury box, had the great courage of admitting her prejudice against Mrs. Rattenbury before the trial. Now, it is to her and to those who may think like her that I address this passage. If, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you were judging of moral responsibility in this case, your task might be a light one, for you cannot resist nausea and disgust at the way this middle-aged woman has ensnared and degraded this hapless youth.
Oh, no. Not from him.
They have to say these things, dear. It's all a trick. They don't mean them, you know.
They do.
But to that courageous lady, and to all of you, I would say with reverence, let him that is without sin cast the first stone. And mercifully, perhaps, you may say to yourselves, she has been punished enough. Wherever she walks, she will be a figure of shame forever. Let that thought haunt you in your deliberations.
And you may remember that when counsel asked this woman, did you really choose to gratify your adulterous passions in the room in which your little child lay asleep? That she answered, apparently in perfectly good faith, why not? The little chap was asleep. He was a sound sleeper. Well, there it is. That is the woman. A woman who, having ceased to have ordinary relations with her husband, chose as her paramour a boy almost young enough to be her son. That is the woman. A woman who tells you she has lied to and deceived her husband and has gratified her sexual lusts without regard for the consequences. Members of the jury, having heard her learned counsel, it may be that you will say that you cannot feel any human sympathy for that woman. Indeed, that you cannot have any feeling except disgust.
Like some of this water, dear. No, thank you. It can't be much longer.
But members of the jury, let me say this. The disgust you may feel for this woman must not, and I repeat that, must not, make you any more ready to convict her of the crime, the only crime with which she is charged. The crime of murder. In fact, it should, if anything, make you less ready, and I will repeat that, less ready to accept such evidence as there may be against her. Prejudice, dislike, disapproval, disgust must have no part in your verdict. That is not the way of English law, of which we are so justly proud.
I think perhaps we've discussed it enough, anyway, to take a first vote. Is that agreeable?
Yes.
By voice, don't you think? So that we can argue it later. Wood first. Mr. Braithwaite.
Guilty.
Mrs. Davenport.
guilty, but with the strongest possible plea for mercy.
I expect we'll all endorse that. Mr. Donald.
Not guilty.
Mr. Fox.
Guilty.
Mr. Golder.
Guilty.
Mr. Harmon.
Guilty.
Mr. Nutt.
Guilty.
Mr. Makin.
Guilty.
Mr. Sherman.
Guilty.
Mrs. Steen.
Guilty.
Mr. Williams.
Guilty.
And I vote guilty myself. Mr. Donald, the vote runs 11 to 1 against you. Would you care to give your arguments?
The boy was led into it by that woman.
In law, that still makes him guilty.
Oh, bother the law.
No, we can't. We're here to administer it.
Well, as a rule against me, I'll have to change then. But under protest, mind.
Very well. Now, now, Mrs. Rattenbury. Mr. Braithwaite.
Guilty.
Mrs. Davenport.
Not guilty.
But you said only yesterday.
Mr. Donald, please. How'd you vote?
Guilty, of course. Guilty as hell.
Mr. Fox.
Not guilty.
Mr. Golder.
Not guilty.
Mr. Harmon.
Guilty.
Mr. Nutt.
Not guilty.
Mr. Makin.
Not guilty.
Mr. Sherman.
Not guilty.
Mrs. Steen.
Guilty.
Mr. Williams.
Guilty.
And I vote not guilty. That makes 7-5 in favor of acquittal.
Do you realize that you've swung the vote in favor of that woman?
It would appear so.
Mrs. Davenport, as I gather from Mr. Donald's remarks, that your opinion has swung in Mrs. Rattenbury's favor during the course of this trial. Perhaps you'd like to give the minority your reasons?
I'll try. It's true that I loathe and abominate the woman with all my heart. It's true that I believe that for the sake of humanity she would be better dead. But as the judge said, our prejudice against her should make us more careful to find in her favour, not less.
He didn't tell us to acquit her.
He did, Mr. Donald, within the limits that a judge can go. And I've had some legal experience. I voted for Mrs. Rattenbury's acquittal on the charge of murder, which is the only thing we are here to judge. I believe most passionately that she did not kill her husband. And I would like to hear the arguments of Mr. Donald and those who, against all the evidence, believe that she did.
Sir?
Oh, how is she?
I'm very worried, Mr. Montague. I've never seen anything quite so bad.
Is it the verdict that's worrying her? The signs aren't unhopeful.
It's not the verdict, sir.
What is it?
Exhaustion, of course, but it's not just that. She's just sitting there, silent, staring into a corner. You can't get her to speak, not at all. Oh. Not even to say thank you, and you know what she's like about that.
You think she needs a doctor?
Oh, I think she needs more than a doctor, sir. If it's guilty, she'll have that, of course. And I expect if it's not guilty, she'll have it too, but it won't be what she needs.
What do you think she needs?
Well, you want it straight, sir?
Please.
To be told that she's a human being.
I can do that.
No, sir. Now, you're connected with this case. So am I. She trusted me once, but she doesn't trust me now.
Who then?
I don't know, sir. I just don't know.
Oh. If the verdict is favourable, I've arranged an ambulance to take her to a nursing home.
The crowd will follow it and the report.
She'll be covered up and carried out face down.
That won't fool them.
It's the best we can do. Have everything ready, Wardress, in case.
Very good, sir.
All rise. Members of the jury, are you agreed upon your verdict?
Yes, sir.
Do you find the prisoner George Alfred Wood guilty or not guilty of murder?
Guilty. But we should like to add a rider to that. We strongly recommend him to mercy.
Do you find the prisoner Alma Victoria Rattenbury guilty or not guilty of murder?
Not guilty.
Silence, please. Then you find George Alfred Wood guilty of murder and Alma Victoria Rattenbury not guilty. And that is the verdict of you all?
Yes.
Silence. George Alfred Wood, you stand convicted of murder. Have you anything to say?
Freddy, it's all right. You're not guilty.
Have you anything to say?
Nothing at all. Wardress, leave the woman in the dock. She has another charge to answer.
Sorry, dear, my mistake. It won't take a minute.
George Alfred Wood, the jury have convicted you of murder. With a strong recommendation to mercy, this will be forwarded by me to the proper quarters, where it will doubtless receive consideration. My duty now is to pass upon you the only sentence which the law knows for the crime of which you have been convicted. The sentence of the court upon you is that you be taken from this place to a lawful prison, and there to a place of execution, and that you there suffer death by hanging, and that your body be afterwards buried within the precincts of the prison in which you shall have been confined before your execution. And may the Lord have mercy on your soul.
Amen.
George. Oh, George.
You silly cow.
Mr. Croom Johnson, there is another indictment against this woman, one of being an accessory after the fact. What course do you propose to take?
In view of the jury's verdict, I propose to offer no evidence on this indictment, and with your lordship's permission to withdraw it altogether.
Very well. Let Alma Victoria Rattenbury be discharged.
It's a woman inside. I saw her carried out.
Yeah, but Grace, down. You couldn't see her face.
Well, then it must be her.
You can't be sure.
Yeah. The hell is all around.
Have you seen her yet, nurse?
Come and look.
I didn't know where they put her.
She's in here.
I wondered what you were all peering at.
The crowd's still outside.
Oh, not as many now. They look pretty grim, what's left of them, though.
Poor thing.
What did you say?
I said, poor thing. And I meant it.
Do you know what she did?
I don't care what she did. You should have seen her face when they carried her in.
Blood pressure's just a little high, but there's nothing seriously wrong.
No.
What you need is rest and sleep. And what I'm prescribing for you will give them to you. Is there anything now you want?
The faces. Could you stop them, Doctor?
Faces? Those are just nurses looking after you.
They aren't looking after me. They're looking at me. There she is. That's her. That's the monster.
I'm sure you're mistaken.
I know it's quite ridiculous. Not guilty, sir. I quite agree. I was totally flabbergasted. I can only assume that our Mrs. Davenport is in way to pressure. She's not naturally a very strong person, I would say. Ah, Mrs. Davenport. Miss Wilkinson.
I recommend the ravigotte de boeuf flamande.
I'll just have the lemon so.
Will that be enough after your ordeal?
My ordeal? Oh, the verdict. That didn't take us long.
So I saw in the news. 47 minutes only. And then to reach such a surprising verdict.
Did it surprise you?
I would say it has amazed the whole country.
And outraged it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Funny.
What's the joke, Mrs. Davenport?
That it should be I who have outraged the country. And, of course, your hotel. Never mind, Miss Wilkinson. I shall be leaving it tomorrow.
But there's no need for that.
There's need for me. I prefer not to outrage people. Thank you, Miss Wilkinson. That'll be all.
Matron says you'd have a nice stiff whiskey. Why, whatever are you doing?
Dressing. The doctor said I could go out.
Did he?
Anyway, I'm a voluntary patient.
I'd better tell Matron.
No, don't. Look, you're the nice one. You've been good to me. Please accept this.
We're not allowed tips.
It's a present, that's all. Just for now. I'll be back later on.
Before dark?
Oh, long before that. Just going out to see a film. Cheer myself up, you know.
It's raining.
No, it's clearing. Look, it's clearing to the south.
More tea, miss?
No, thank you.
That'll be 2 and 8 with the tea cake. Thank you, miss.
Thank you.
You know, I'm absolutely sure that was Mrs. Rattenbury. My gosh. First time in my life I've ever got so close to a murderess.
But she isn't a murderess.
Well, that jury must have been out of its collective mind.
People about. I know this place. George and I must have met here once. Yes. He dared me to jump and I wouldn't, and then he carried me. Yes, of course. Oh, I've no paper left. I must write something. Here are some envelopes. Oh, God, did I bring that knife? Will it be sharp enough?
George Alfred Wood. As governor of this prison, I am to advise you that the Home Secretary has considered your application for a reprieve and has recommended that the penalty of death shall be commuted to a sentence of imprisonment for life. I need hardly say that I am most heartily glad.
Yes, sir. Life. How long is that, Warder?
18 years. 12 with good behaviour. You'll still be a young lad when you come out.
30. Call that young.
I do. Anyway, you'll be alive, and that's all that matters, isn't it?
Yes, I suppose.
One has to be bold to do this thing. But it's better to die. Beautiful. Alone. Thank God. At last. It's now. Here and now. Oh, give me the strength, God. And the courage.
Six stab wounds, certainly self-inflicted by some sharp instrument. The deceased must have been possessed of great strength of purpose to have inflicted such savage wounds upon herself.
I identified the body as of Alma Victoria Rattenbury, my former employer and friend.
I do not propose to read at this inquest all the documents left behind by the deceased, but there are some extracts that will show with utter certainty that the deceased intended to dispatch herself. Here is one. I want to make it perfectly clear that no one is responsible for my action. I made up my mind on the last day of the trial that if George Wood was sentenced to death, I would not survive him. If only I thought I could help George Wood, I would stay on. But his death sentence is my own, etc., etc. Now, this, written on the back of an envelope by that stream, are her very last words.
8 o'clock. After so much running and walking, I have got here. Oh, to see the swans and the spring flowers and to smell them. And how strange that I jumped off the train at Christchurch and came just to this spot where George and I once made love. It is beautiful here. What a lovely world we are in, if only we would let ourselves see it. It must be easier to be hanged than to have to do the job oneself. But that's just my bad luck. Pray God nothing stops me. God bless my children and look after them. One has to be bold to do this thing. But it is better to die. It is beautiful here. And I am alone. And thank God for peace at last.
Having regard to all this evidence, my verdict is as follows. The deceased was found dead on the 22nd of April, 1935, in the River Avon in the parish of Christchurch East. The cause of death was hemorrhage from self-inflicted injuries by some sharp-pointed instrument held in the right hand. And I do say that Alma Victoria Rattenbury, not being of sound mind, did kill herself.
That was Cause Célèbre, a play for radio written by Terence Rattigan and produced by Norman Wright. The part of Alma Rattenbury was played by Diana Dawes, Mrs. Davenport, Gwen Watford, the judge, Carlton Hobbs, Mr. Caswell, Robert Harris, Mr. O'Connor KC, Noel Johnson, and George Alfred Wood by Robin Brown. The rest of the cast was as follows. Mr. Rattenbury, Hayden Jones, Christopher Rattenbury, Peter Whitman, Mr. Davenport, Peter Williams, Davenport Jr., Gareth Johnson, Mr. Croom Johnson, KC, Peter Pratt, Montague, Michael Deacon, Harvey, Garrard Green, Irene Riggs, Catherine Parr, Joan the Wardress, Betty Bascom, Miss Wilkinson, Polly Murch, Miss Johnson, Cecile Chevreau, Street Girl, Frances Jeter, with Rosalind Adams, Maddie Head, Deborah Page, Michael Burlington, Alan Dudley, Trader Faulkner, Dennis McCarthy, Clifford Norgate, Hector Ross, and Anthony Smee. The newsreader was Alvar Adele, and the studio managers Patience Pratt, Marcel McCuish, and David Hitchinson. The songs Night Brings Me You and Dark Haired Marie were composed by Alma Rattenbury, and the pianist was Martin Goldstein.